You're listening to the Coach Team Podcast, a podcast with Swedish Basketball Federation's basketball developer, Rickard Aspgren and Andrew Plake. In today's episode, we will talk to Mike McKay, who is Performance Manager, Women's High Performance at Canada Basketball.
Welcome.
Well, it's great to be here.
Good to have
Very
you.
Very excited to have a lovely conversation about basketball, which is my favorite topic.
You know, I have to say, just before we get started, you know, I stopped playing basketball my elite career 2013, and I started running a youth club in Örebro in Sweden, and obviously the first thing I do is I just start looking up clinics and start looking up all the stuff I can find just to kind of just devour all the information that's out there and knowledge. And I came across your clinic in, if it's in Manitoba or it's a Manitoba YouTube channel, Games Approach and Basketball. And from there, I was just completely sold. It was unlike anything I had seen, you know, before that. I had just seen in instructional, very traditional block training. And this kind of opened a whole new door for me. And then fast forward, I got to also visit you guys in Canada. And I just want to first off thank you, because it's been very instrumental in the way I look at leadership and the way I look at coaching and basketball development. So great to have you here.
That's always the best thing I think about coaching is seeing who goes on and takes your ideas and expands them. And I think what I'm starting to see is that I really think that the Swedish Federation is trying to push some of these ideas and grow the game. And then it comes back to you, and it's like, okay, and I got to push it a little more this way, a little more right. that way. And that's what I love, is that give and take that keeps pushing the game forward. And right. I think that's how it gets done.
Exactly. But give us a little background. How'd you end up, walk us through how you ended up at Canada Basketball and how it all started.
Well, I was the classic, in Canada, high school phys ed teacher, but I was also athletic director, head of phys ed. I was the head football coach for, oh my goodness, going on 10, 15 years. I was the head women's basketball coach. I was the jumps coach in track and field. And I ran my own basketball camps in the summer. I coached provincial team basketball. And I wasn't married, so I just loved coaching and learning. But mm-hmm. I also was, there's a lady named Carolyn Savoy. She used to be the coach at Dalhousie University. And she came to me one day and says, Mike, you're going to coach the provincial team for women's basketball. Well, if Carolyn Savoy said you were doing something, you did it. You never said no to Carolyn. And then she also said to me, and you're also going to do our coach education. You're going to start to deliver the courses. I was pretty young at the time, but she said, no, you're good. I've seen you. You're going to be good at this. And so I became, over time, the lead coach educator in Nova Scotia. And I was probably also the biggest thorn in the side of Canada Basketball, because I kept complaining about, when are we going to update this material? Mm-hmm. Because we're talking in the late 80s, early 90s, and we're still, was the book was written in, I think, 82, 83. And so, it was, remember the long socks, yeah, the short shorts, big hair. It was ugly pictures, and we had nothing about the shot clock. We had nothing about the three-point line. Things had changed, and yet we were still using the same material. So I got a call one time in 1983. Well, sorry. I'd done what we call our level four, and I had gotten – Canada Basketball had to approve it. They had approved me to go to Australia. So I went to Australia to study their system, because I had done all the clinics in U.S. and Canada. I'd done every Nike clinic. I'd been them all. And it's not like I knew it all, but I wanted something different. And it just happened that the Olympics had been in 2000, so Australia was pretty open to having people come down and visit. So I got to meet a lot of people. But unbeknownst to me, at that time, the National Coaching Certification Program in Canada was changing what they called CBET, which meant competency-based education training. So every sport had to hire somebody to do the changeover to competency-based. Mm-hmm. So when I got back, all of a sudden I get this phone call saying, you've been targeted as somebody that would be good to do this job. Unbeknownst to me, two people had taken the job already and quit, because mm-hmm. they just didn't think they could do it. It was just too much. And so I gave at the time, it was Leslie Delson was the director. I gave her five things. I said, if you do these five things, I'll take the job. Never heard from her for 2 months. Never heard from. And then all of a sudden, I'm getting ready to coach in a semifinal of our high school provincial league, and I get a call on the Thursday. I'm coming in tomorrow to talk to you, and I've met all five things. So she flew in, met with me, and then I went and I missed the semifinal game, and I went up to Toronto, and I had to go. I had to be there for their meeting. Used to be then the national meeting. And then I did, but one of my conditions was I wouldn't start till April 1st after my high school girls basketball team had finished. So I started on April Fool's Day, and I was a fool on 2004. That's my first day on the job. And it was only supposed to be 6 months, and it was basically I was supposed to take the manuals and change the font and change the pictures. That was the intent, right? That just make it look better. But after about the first week, I'm like, this is crazy. If we're going to do this, we're going to do it right.
Yeah.
And I said, this is going to take about 6 years. And it did. It took me 6 years, really, until we got the first thing going. Because also at that same time, there was a big move around what was called the long-term athlete development model.
Right.
That came out in 2005. And, of course, the coaching association wanted us to get all the coaching stuff done first. And all the sports basically said, no, you need the long-term athlete development model first. You have to have that. Then you build your coaching to that. Well, they can, no, do it the other way. Mm. But then they realized it was wrong. So it took about 2 years to do the long-term athlete development. Then we came in with all the coaching stuff. And what I did was I went out and got people who were good in each of their areas. Instead of bringing in the past, you used to bring in all your top senior national team coaches, the best university coaches and pro coaches, and they're dictating what we're doing with six-year-olds. No,
yeah.
I went around and found who's the best person coaching six-year-olds in the country. I want them on that committee. Who's the best people coaching 10-year-olds? I want them on this committee. Who's the best person coaching? And then I wanted also to try to get some diversity, and that was hard back then.
How did you define, you said the best coaches for that age. At that time, how were you defining the best coaches for that
age? It was for those youngest ones, who was making it fun? Because I had, you know, as a phys ed teacher, I always try to stay current of what the current trends were in teaching. And, you know, I've always enjoyed professional development. So I knew back then it was just called small-sided games. I knew that we wanted a games approach.
Mm-hmm.
So you just start researching and you start to find out. But then who is the people out there? And you talk to people in the different provinces. Well, who does a really good job? And then you go watch. And that's the person I want.
Mm-hmm.
And we really got some great people who are just great with kids and made it fun and exciting. And then I think the French Federation helped a lot. There was a little thing they had called Tony Parker basketball. It was really good. I don't think they really understood how good it was, you know, but I asked them if I could use some of their ideas.
And just for our listeners, that's because of Canada, there's so much French speaking that you could apply that.
Yeah, right. I could. And they were very helpful. Mm-hmm. They were very helpful. And but I'm very good at taking ideas and expanding them and growing them. Because, again, people always talk about being creative. To me, creative is not inventing something new. Creative is taking something that's already done, and either you mix up the way it's done, or you expand on it, or you mm-hmm. simplify it, or you just change it a little bit. And that's what I was able to do with a lot of the stuff mm-hmm. was done. And I was lucky I had a lot of laboratories where I could go and test these things. And one of the key things was to find those associations or clubs that were willing to experiment. And I had Regina basketball. There was a good friend there, Tim Artemenko, and he basically let me go into Saskatchewan and just test everything. So now when I would go into some of the bigger clubs, say in Ontario, and somebody would stand up at a meeting and say, well, that'll never work. I said, well, let me tell you about what we did in Regina. Mm-hmm. And here's what happened. And here's a video of it happening. So you were able to now sell the idea that it worked.
So you've had critics, though, along the way.
Oh, my goodness. You want to pull the knives out of the back? Yeah. Like you can't do this type of job and be worrying about the critics.
Yeah.
What's the Ted Lasso line? Be curious.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
I love that. That to me is what you had to be. You had to be curious about it and keep learning, keep growing. And I actually get bored, I get bored. And I don't tell people this a lot, but when I'm doing basketball clinics sometimes, I'm actually trying stuff that I've never tried before sometimes because I want the excitement of the pressure of trying it with new players in a new situation to see how. It's like making jazz music, right? It's like you're riffing. I'm just riffing off what, here's the players I've been given. Here's the tasks that I've been assigned. Let's see how they do. Let's try this and see if it works.
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't work, I'm confident enough that I can say, okay, that's not working. Let's go in this direction.
Now, when you're doing that, when you're riffing, when you're trying new stuff, how far can you go? Like, what areas will you stay in? But, like, you know, we talked about, like, what are you, what is your boundaries?
Well,
coaches so they know how much can we experiment?
We can go down a long one on this one.
Yeah.
But I'll give you
go ahead.
I'll give you the middle one. But to me, I think in analyzing my strength and giving it some kind of definition, it's this whole idea of metacognition, which is thinking about your thinking. And really, in simplicity, it's three things. It's your planning, your tracking and monitoring of what's happening, and then your debriefing of what just happened. And then your plan the next time going higher. That's what I think I do. The key is I know my intent of what I want to accomplish. So you know the old practice plans where we do this for 2 minutes, we do that for 5 minutes? Mm-hmm. There's a great friend of mine, Sefu Bernard, who now works with the Mystics as their player development coach. And he used to invite me in when he was head of our CPs, and he'd say, Mike, I need to see your practice plan. I said, Seth, you know I don't have a practice plan. I said, you tell me how much time I have and what you want the players to accomplish in that amount of time.
Mm-hmm.
So as long as I know the intent and I know your timelines, I can finish right on time. I'll finish right as the clock hits whatever, but I also know we're going to have explored that intent or that, okay? So maybe it's the solution is, how do we create an advantage off a ball screen? Let's make it simpler. How do you play dynamic one-on-one to create advantages? Mm-hmm. Well, to me, I have an idea of what my solution is. Now I'm just going to see where's the starting point. Do I have to go back all the way to the beginning mm-hmm. and assume that everybody doesn't know anything? No, let's find out where they are. Let's see how they self-organize mm-hmm. at first. Let's see where they are. Now I know by how I load it. Mm-hmm. Do I have to load them mentally? Do I have to load them physically? Do I have to load them by a skill? Now I can start to load or deload to try to put them in a challenge, that balance between skill and challenge, mm-hmm. which is the whole flow theory, right?
Right.
Which is if the skill is better than the challenge, I get bored.
Yeah.
And which too many players get bored.
Yeah.
The coach just always goes back to this drill that they love, and there's no challenge to it, physically, mentally. But if the challenge is too much greater than the skill, I get frustrated because I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll quit because it's like, I'll never get this. So the key is just that challenge just right there that they think they, and then you just keep.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole idea around constraint-led approach, right? Is just constantly manipulating that challenge. And that's, to me, is what I think me riffing is all about. It's just me playing around with the challenge. But I got to also read your faces. I got to see, there's excitement in this. Or you get the one like, okay, no, mm-hmm. they're not buying this. And players I work with a lot now, they'll say, no, coach, like, Mike, this isn't working. Like, come up with another one.
You have that honest discussion?
Because like, I'll stop them. I'll stop them. And you saw me say, like, right. How can I be a better coach? Okay, what do you think about
Let's
this?
Let's give some context what you said there, because this was an amazing. So you were at Barton Clinic this weekend, which was in a great clinic, you know, for the coaches that were there, and they can attest to this. And for those who weren't there, unfortunately, you guys missed out on something. But you ended day two where you ended practice, you had a debriefing, and you said to all the players, okay, I want you guys to think about one thing that your teammates, a spotlight that they did well, and I want you guys to give me one thing that I can improve as a coach.
Yes.
One thing. And you said, no fluff, no BS, let's be direct, let's be honest. And you got back to your debriefing. They start off by, you know, cautiously, carefully kind of said something. And you said, no, let's more elaborate. Give me more. And they came up with some good stuff,
mm-hmm.
you know. And I found this really interesting because I was talking to some other coaches, and I don't want to go into names here, but a very prominent coach in our Swedish higher league. And I asked him, do you do this? And he responded, no, that I'm scared to do that. And I said, well, why? Why wouldn't you do that? Well, the players may think that if their opinion becomes reality, it becomes truth. And I was kind of taken back, but I said, well, their reality is the truth. And what I thought was so great about you doing it was, let's put all the cards on the table, understand I want to be better, I'm vulnerable in this, but let's create a dialogue. And I thought that was great, you know. And I hope that our coaches, you know, apply that in their environments, because I just thought it was really, really rewarding for everybody.
Well, a couple key things there. One is we're creating an environment, and we want this synergy of their input and my input, and together that, you know, it's 1 + 1 = 3.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's that synergy of us both working together to challenge, and that's where the excitement comes in. The second one is this idea of truth, because a lot of times they won't give you their truth. They're trying to say, what does coach want me to say? Mm-hmm. And I'm like a fluff, like detector. I'm like, no, that's fluff.
Yeah.
And that's where we've developed this in our culture, this whole idea of A, B, C, and D, which is, if you ask me, one of the most important
explain
things.
Explain that for our listeners.
And we can all say that thing is in our we have stolen it from you, we can say.
It is probably one of the most important things in our women high-performance culture.
Okay.
And what it is it's a way to ensure depth of conversation, that it's a way to make sure we can have direct conversations about difficult topics in a way that doesn't challenge the person. It's a way to be curious, right? So if I said something, so if a player said to me, the one I usually get for how can be better coaches, they usually say, well, Coach Mike, you talk too quiet. You're not loud enough. Okay, good. So I could say, does everybody agree? Does everybody agree with that? Well, does anybody want to build? And that's usually what I will say. Can you build on that?
So A is agree.
A is agree.
Right.
And just a thumbs up. Everybody agree? Thumbs up. Good. Move on. But we don't like the agree ones. That's the simplest one. But the B is the build, and that's where you start to tear down the fluff. And anybody who worked with me enough knows, oh, here he goes. He's going to say it. What's that look like, sound like, or feel like?
What's that look like, sound like, and feel like?
So look is, what are you actually going to do? What are you actually going to say? And then what are you actually going to show as feeling? What's your facial expression going to be? What's your tone going to be? Right? Those things are so powerful. And so when we're building IPPs, we use this look like, sound like, feel like a lot. But that's me in metacognition, getting back to metacognition. I have a sense of what I'm going to be looking for. I want to see this from players. What am I going to hear them saying? What's their verbals going to be? And then what body language do I want to see? What facial expressions do I want to see? And then now all of a sudden I'm out there, I'm not seeing that. What's the problem? Why am I not seeing that? Is it because they don't have the skill to do it? Or is it because they have a habit of always dribbling with the right hand? Okay. I got to challenge that then to get to what I want to see. Why are they not talking? Is it because they're nervous? Is it because they're shy? Is it because they don't have the language for it? Mm-hmm. Oh, I got to give them a language. They don't know what they should be saying now. Oh, why are they not showing excitement right now? What's going on at home? What's happened before they got here? There's something going on here. So to me, the more I plan, what's it looking like, sound like, that's that whole metacognition thing,
mm-hmm.
right? And then tracking is really that whole idea of me observing, what am I actually observing in that activity and putting my eye on the right thing at the right time. Too many people will have this great drill we're going to do, and then they watch the wrong thing, or they're giving feedback on something that's insignificant.
All right.
Right? Or we all have those triggers that just, there we are, we're not running again. We're not hustling. Okay, we're on the line. I'll give you an example. I was mentoring a coach, and he was doing a transition offensive drill, and he really wanted them to be working on that explosiveness from offense to defense. But in his drill, he was doing like they just did this reversal, and then there was a scripted shot, and then they were supposed to just play it live and get out and go and transition. That's what he wanted. But he got so caught up in the substitution pattern and them not sprinting into the right places to be in the drill, that the next 15 minutes all became just getting into the right positions, mm-hmm. and hustling on the floor. And they never once did any offensive transition. And he said, yeah, but I got to build my culture first. I said, I agree. I'm always about building your culture first, but you created a false culture that they really wasn't that important. It wasn't important because you wanted the randomness anyways. Mm-hmm. You wanted randomness, you had randomness, but it wasn't structured enough that you could actually control it. And I said, so you had 15 minutes of all they learned is a structured drill that they will never, ever, ever lose. Right. Use, never use it. Never will they ever be in that structure except in that drill.
Yeah.
But the randomness was happened every time in the game. And now you could have just coached on what you wanted to work on.
Mm.
But it was a trigger for him, always this controlling thing of the drill had to look good or else it makes me look bad.
Yeah.
And that's what he talked about. He says, I just feel like if somebody watching me, and because you were there and it didn't look good, I feel you were going to get upset because my drill didn't look good. Yeah. But it was the exact opposite. Right. So again, he was tracking the wrong thing, getting back to the tracking part. And then the debrief should be about what we were tracking.
Yeah.
And did it actually help us? And then that debrief should lead us to the next plan. And this is where I see so many coaches fall down is, you know, you're busy, got other things in your job, you're doing next thing, you go, oh, let's do that same drill we did last Tuesday. It worked pretty good. But you forgot your debrief. It was a terrible drill.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Or we needed to start here, not back down here. Because it's like the old idea of Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill. Hopefully over your season, you don't always have to start back down the bottom of the hill with every drill you do.
Mm-hmm.
You've pushed the rock up the hill to here. Now we put a wedge in and the rock's starting there. So next day we do this drill. Hopefully, I'm going to check for understanding, right? But the rock's there. But maybe it's only slipped back this far. It hasn't slipped all the way back to the bottom.
No.
Do you think this is a thing with that coaches think of the importance of repetition?
Yeah, we've all grew up with that repetition, the more reps you got, the better. You know, 10,000 times you had to do it. But, you know, I can't ever remember all these fancy new quotes, but repetition without repetition, like all those sorts of things. But to me, it's the quality of the rep. I'd rather you get 3 quality reps that are game-like and that can transfer than 100 reps of a bad habit that, you know, and that's why I watch practices and I see on-air practicing, and especially things like passing with no defense on you, and then they wonder why as soon as you play defense, your team can't pass. Well, we practiced this press break. Yeah, but you did it on air.
Mm-hmm.
You did it on air. Right. It's a totally different skill. Totally different skill. So again, am I looking for the repetition of the pattern? There's some things you can practice on air. Don't get me wrong. There's some things that you can do on air. But the actual transfer through the game is not going to be the same as if what the players are seeing is the same. You know, the context has to be similar. Right. The more context is the same, the more it's going to transfer.
We will come back to that, but just to close the A, B, C, D.
Yeah. We're still on B.
Okay, this is yeah. C, agree, build. C is the golden child. It's the goose that gave the golden egg, right? And that's a challenge. And when you use a challenge, it's a safe way to say is, I have a different idea, and here's what my idea is. It's not saying you're wrong. Because I had a coach tweak my ABC, and he credited me with ABCD, but he used D as disagree. I would never use a disagree. I would never want somebody to say, I disagree with you. Because that's just leading to an argument. A challenge is so different than a disagreement. A challenge is, I got another thought on how we might do this. And that's progressive. That's what's growing your organization. Disagreements just lead to tension, you know, and arguments. Because I never have to really present. I disagree with you. No, it's wrong. You're wrong. That's not going to work.
Yeah. Let's agree to disagree.
Yeah. Right? But instead of a challenge is, I got another way of looking at it.
And I think the good thing was that when you use it, I think people like act the discussion like directly being different.
Because huge.
They feel, okay, it doesn't have to be my opinion. It's just I want to challenge that opinion. So it's...
And then, of course, a D actually was invented by one of my players one time. She was really good at fluff, not listening. So I do it at the end of practice, and we'd ask a question, what went well, what do you think, and then all, you know, we can work on. And I could tell she wasn't listening, so I challenged her, you know, on it, and she was giving me fluff. So then I just said something like, okay, well, how's this going to impact us in the next game next week? And she goes, oh, you want me to go deeper? And I'm like, whoa, yeah, I want you to go deeper. And I was like, that is brilliant.
Right.
And we talked about it. I said, yeah, that's a great one. And then, and she really liked that. She thought that that was a good one that sometimes take, cause she says, well, you always use the same questions all the time. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So now deeper means how would this apply in another context or later on? And it's so powerful, those in conversations. And if you've ever, Andrew's been to Canada, and if you sit in a room and listen to us, we don't even realize how many times you'll hear the word, can I build on that? Or I challenge.
Mm.
You know, those are the ones that usually, or I agree, but I'd like to challenge. I agree with this part, but I'd like to challenge that.
But is that unique? Because that was something, you know, that I wanted to touch upon today that was so remarkable about my visit to Canada was the discussion and how high the ceiling was and how much you guys challenged each other and how healthy it was and welcoming. Is that common in Canada, or is it unique for the just basketball, or is that something you guys have had to work on?
I think we've had to work on it. I'm not a fan of what I call the meeting after the meeting. I talked to you about this, but when I first got to Canada basketball, sometimes I'd go into meetings and you'd have this meeting and everybody just would sit there and the person would present, and then, you know, I'd kind of ask a question or two, but, you know, it just didn't seem like there's much discussion. And then you'd leave, and then somebody goes, "Mike, come here, Mike." And I'm like, "What? I want to talk to you about something. I didn't really agree with what was said in there. I want to talk." I go, "What do you mean you didn't agree? Why didn't you say it at the meeting?" "Well, I didn't feel comfortable saying anything in there. I just didn't want to upset anybody." I'm like, "You have to say that in the meeting." Hmm. Like, we're not having the meeting after the meeting every time we meet. If you have something to say and you say it in a way that's not abrasive and I'm not tearing you down, I learned, I got the idea from Doug Lemoff, who's a great on educating, and I don't think Doug Lemoff invented either. I mean, he probably got it from somewhere and just shared it, but I was using this back in high school and with my teams back in the school, but it was just ABC then, mm-hmm. right? And just as a way to get our class being more challenging, but I find it was perfect for coaching.
But you work also with the national teams in Canada. Like, do the coaches there use this model, and do they use it with the players?
Our women's high performance staff uses it, and Victor, our new coach from Spain, he's learning to use it now. Yeah, yeah. I can't speak on the men's side; they'd have their own way of doing things. But within our women's high performance, and if our women's high performance is in a staff meet with Canada Basketball, we use it, and I know our directors he's aware of how we speak, and they like it. It works. And when I work with all our coaches in women's high performance, like all our age group team, boom, when I go and work with the provinces, boom, they know that language is there. I was just at our national championships, and I'm debriefing with the technical directors, and they know that's how I am. They know Mike's going to come in with the agree, build, and challenge. They know that. Yeah. They also know that they can do it with me, that I want to be challenged. They want me to get, "Mike, I want to challenge you on that. You don't understand our province." And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
But when you are a coach, which times in practice or in which areas do you think this is going to be useful?
Oh, everywhere. I want my player to come up and say, "Coach, can I challenge you on this warm-up?" We do the same warm-up every day. It is boring. "Can I give you a suggestion on something we could do?" Man, I'd be like dancing a jig. I'd be like, "Yeah, let's hear it. You do warm up today, right?" Now, is that the practice right before the gold medal game of the FIBA World Cup? Well, maybe it's a little different. But I think your player, if you build a relationship with them, they understand when the timing of those things is important.
Right.
So if you're asking a question, and they learn pretty quickly with me, like I do our junior academy now, which is 13 and 14 year olds. We pick the top 40, and I got to do that next Sunday. I got to pick the top 40 players to come into our junior academy. And one of the big things they learn is if coach asks a question, he wants to know what you're thinking, not what you think he wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll spend the first weekend just asking questions to say, "No, build on that. That's a little fluffy. That's a coach answer. What's your answer?" I want them to think. So constantly asking them. And we don't debrief every single drill, because that can really get slow and monotonous. But we'll pick out certain times, and usually I'm pretty good at understanding they need a little break now. We've gone hard for about 20 minutes, say, boom. Instead of just going over and standing at the water, let's just do a little brief. Partner up quickly, you two. What went well in that drill? What's something we can do better? Go, talk. Okay, who's got one they want to share? Boom, boom. Any builds? Any agrees? Any challenges? We good? Another one is what I call our ice check. So a big one for me is what I call intensity, concentration, and energy. So we always talk about what's the intensity we need for this activity we're doing or drill, what's the concentration, what are we putting our attention on, and then what's the energy? How are we going to give energy in this drill? And I may stop. "Hey, quick, bring it in. Let's do an ice check. How's our intensity right now?" Give me a number. 5 out of 10? Is that good enough? Okay. Everybody agree? Any builds, challenges? Well, nah, coach, I actually think it's like a three. Okay. What are we going to do about it? You tell me. Mm-hmm. So somebody say, oh, you can make us run. Does everybody agree with that? I can make you run? No, no, coach, I want to challenge that one. we'll find another way. Okay, well, what is it? What am I going to see? What am I going to see you do, or what am I going to hear you do, or how are you going to, right? Show me. Or and they come up. They know. Even 12-year-olds, they'll know. Right. Okay, I'll hold you to it. You made a commitment to this, now I'll hold you to it. And then once they've made a commitment to it, now that leads into what I say, okay, if you've made a commitment to something now, we all as a group now get to hold you accountable. And this means we get to remind you before the activity. So I'm going to remind you that you said the people on the sideline are going to be given energy by encouraging. Okay, I'm reminding you. The second thing, during the activity, we get to encourage you. So I'm going to encourage you. Come on, you got to give them energy. Be encouraging. And then after, we're either going to have praise or a breakdown conversation. Hey, great job giving energy during the drill. I saw you over there clapping. I heard your voice. Great job. Or it could be, Andrew, are you still committed to giving energy? I didn't see you clapping, and I did not hear you say a word during that drill. I would never say, and I think you don't care.
Yeah, never putting in their assumption of feelings or their
right.
thoughts.
I just say what I observing. Saw and what I heard, and it makes me feel. It makes me feel that
I think that's a big one.
It's a huge one.
Right, because we see a lot of coaches assume what they're thinking or feeling. Like, you're not engaged. Right, you're not here today.
Yeah.
Well, no. Let's tell me what you see, feel.
I just saw. I just see you not engaged.
Right.
And what does that mean? I don't see you participating by talking.
Right.
I don't see you looking at your teammates. I see you looking off over in the distance.
Right. I think that's really big where coaches assume a player's feelings or thoughts.
Of course.
Instead of what they're observing in the actions.
And I learned that from Jack Donahue, who I learned a lot from, who was our old original national team coach. And Jack used to say this all the time. He said, when I first watched our practice, he says, the main part of the huddle, and Jack was quite a humorous guy, but he says, my main part, he says, I can't see that far anymore. So I need to get them in close. But he says, I'm just looking for eyes. And when I'm doing my little talk at the first, who's not looking in my eyes? Who's kind of looking down? Who's looking away? Who's looking at a partner and kind of, and then I'm going to check in with them. I know I got to check in with him because he's not engaged right now. So why wait till I'm halfway through practice and now get mad and make everybody run or throw them out of practice, because that's what he did back in those days. But he says, I'm going to try to find out who's not engaged now. And a lot of times it was something that just happened outside of practice. And just by acknowledging it and talking with them, okay, you okay to practice? Yeah, coach, thanks. I'm ready to go now. So those things are very important for me. And that's, again, that metacognition about thinking about your thinking and being more intentional in how I'm going to approach players as people. Because remember, I coach people who play basketball. So it's about coaching the people first.
Like, is this like a shift in how you can see on the role as a coach?
I think it's a huge shift. I think the way we were coached, at least the way I was coached, I had some great coaches. But I also had some bad coaches who today could be considered like up for abuse, right? And I think it was always, in fact, one of them did get charged with abuse, and so you learn, I will never do that. You know, I think that sometimes you have to learn, but you would hope that there's less of those experiences for young youth today, because we know, done right, what sport can do for youth. We know, at least in our country, there's been research on the pond, especially for young girls, how positive it can be in their life being involved in a sport at a younger age. But we also know how damaging it can be to be abused and done wrong, and how, because you drive them out of sport, because I'll never want to do that again. So I think it's a huge change, and it leads into this whole idea of transformational, if you want to go down that path now, or we can save it for later. But I think it's one of my missions in life.